Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Shannon Helf on the show today. Shannon is Senior Vice President and Head of Seed Production Innovation at Bayer Crop Science. So Shannon, I am so excited about this conversation that you and I are going to have today. And you know what? We're kind of recent friends because we met through the Most Influential Businesswomen. But then we found out after we met that we are like a stone's throw away from each other in relation to where we live, right?
Yep. As I say, we're just a country block away.
A country block away. I love that. Well, we have so much that I want to talk about today, and I just know that our listeners are going to enjoy just hearing your story. So I know you didn't grow up here in St. Louis. You grew up in Minnesota on a farm. So tell us what growing up was like.
So first, you know, I was deeply involved in the farm, as most children were at that time growing up. Today, I think it's a privilege, but at that time, I didn't think of it much as a privilege. I thought more of it as hard work. And today, I guess, opposite, you know, I think it's a great privilege. And of course, we're lucky enough to have a little bit of a farm ourselves here outside of St. Louis. You know, it was a corn, soybean, and livestock farm. And both of my parents farmed. So when I think about women in agriculture, I really didn't know a difference. My mom farmed alongside my dad. They both still farm today. And in fact, most people who know my parents might think my mom works a little bit harder and puts in her share of the operation as well. So she's very, very active in our farming operation, both on the livestock side and on the crop side. You know, so growing up, baled hay, pulled weeds, we sprayed weeds, worked with the livestock, sorted livestock, and wasn't good at a lot of those jobs. But certainly it taught me about the importance of hard work and what it's like to run a small business as well. So if you think about farms today, and even in the past, it's running small businesses and the commitment that you have to have as a person to make that business successful. As a teenager, you know, of course, I had friends then that came and worked on our farm, and that was a lot of fun to have friends that joined me. It made the work a little bit more fun. And this is the time of the year that's always been my favorite time on the farm, harvest. You know, the weather's beautiful, and it's the time of the year that you actually get to see the results. And of course, in farming, not every harvest is a great harvest, but that's the ultimate end. And so for me, it's tough to not be able to go to our farm because obviously of the challenges with COVID, but it's fun to see farmers out here in our neighborhood being able to harvest their crops. I then left the farm to go to college, and I never wanted to go back to the farm. So I left the farm to go to medical school. And that was really what I wanted to do. And I had this idea as a young girl on the farm that I was going to move to New York City and be a doctor. And I suppose that was, I don't know how I got that image. That's really what I was striving for when I left the farm. You know, we had an agreement at my farm. My dad said, well, you can go to Iowa State because that's a great school for farm girls to go to. So I went to Iowa State, which is an exceptional school for the sciences, right? So whether it's, you know, biology, engineering, or agronomy, and got a degree. Well, I ended up 2 years into my degree of pursuing medicine, I decided that that wasn't what I was interested in. I had an internship at Asgrow, and that was before Monsanto actually had purchased Asgrow. So Asgrow was still a standalone company. And at that time, I decided that's what I wanted to do. There were then two types of jobs at Asgrow. There were the types of jobs I was doing as an intern and the types of jobs all the PhDs had, which looked like really attractive jobs. So they were thinking about strategy and how are we going to put together the best corn plants and get the highest yields. And those were the jobs I wanted. And so that led me to go to graduate school. But it was that internship that changed my career path so much that I was no longer interested in medicine and moving to New York City, and rather that living on the farm and I guess solving world problems in a very different way, in some ways the same, right? Because medicine is serving people as well. It was really about how do we fulfill the needs of food around the world. And I was really much interested in, you know, advancing crop innovations, and that's what led me to graduate school.
And so I know that you have a master's in plant breeding.
Yeah.
And then you went on to get your PhD in weed science.
Correct.
And I remember, Shannon, reading somewhere something that you had said, all farmers, it really doesn't matter if you're in the United States or if you're in Africa. There's a few things that farmers look at. They're looking at yield, they're looking at disease, and they're looking at weed control.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you definitely, with the plant breeding, I'm sure there's yield in there and resiliency, and then, of course, the weed science. But I want to back up. So you said you did the internship at Asgrow. This is why internships are so important, because that was a pivotal point for you, right? You were thinking, I'm going to go into medicine. But then after doing that internship, you're like, no, this is really interesting. And I'm seeing what the PhDs are doing. And that's why it's really important for kids to do these internships.
You know, the types of jobs our companies are doing today are so vastly different than when I was in college. And I think people underestimate what agriculture, how advanced it is, right? We think of Amazon and Google and all of the exciting technology companies. And I will tell you that same excitement and innovation and technology is happening in our company as well. There's so many exciting things, and internships are so important to help. You know, it changed my path, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would tell you, I know a lot of people's paths it changed as well. And to be honest, you know, I think about it at that time, Asgrow, you know, they took a giant leap. Their internships were kind of settled for the year. I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. I had three friends that had internships at Asgrow, and they went and asked, hey, are there any more internships? And they said, well, you know, who is this person? We think she's really good. Bring her in, we'll interview her. So I went in, you know, with the idea that, you know, I had nothing to lose, right? Because
sure,
they had said their internships were closed. They really didn't have any more. And obviously it worked out that I was able to kind of secure an internship. And I worked there for 2 years. So after my internship even, I then stayed on and worked through the school year.
Well, that's a great lesson right there, Shannon.
Yeah.
You know, just because they say no,
don't,
it doesn't hurt to ask, right?
I always tell people the line of people to tell you no is much longer than the line that'll tell you yes. Push through one more time. And I think it obviously that has had a good outcome for me. And interestingly, in an odd way, Asgrow is a part of Bayer now.
Right. Kind of come
full world.
full circle. Well, let's move on in, because you have had an illustrious career at Monsanto.
Mm-hmm.
You've done so many different things, but you started Monsanto, you started in sales.
Yep. And it was interesting because I came out of graduate school with a doctorate degree. And at that time, the industry, like today, was going through consolidation. So your choice was kind of, a lot of people did the graduate school path to think, well, will this change? And it kind of opens up roles. I liked school, so I stayed in graduate school. Had the great opportunity coming out of school then to join our field sales organization. And in kind of a technical role, right? But I could tell you, you didn't need a doctorate to do this job well. So for me, it was, I always say, I went to graduate school, I enjoyed it, and it gave me my first job. You know, that was the beginning of a, what you've said is just an amazing career here for 17 years. Had I not gotten the first job, you know, the rest don't happen, right? So it was so important for me to get the first opportunity. 17 years, and just had the opportunity here in the last 10 months to take my 10th role with the company. Started in field sales, then went to product management, first in the US and then global, then R&D and strategy, and now product supply. So I've really made my way through this organization. And I think it's a good example of don't limit yourself, you know, because when I started, I kind of thought that my career, I would be in field sales and then I'd be a technical manager and have a team, right? And I've done so much more and different than that. I didn't know this job existed, right? And so it's like, go into these jobs with an open mind. Yes. Listen to those around you. You know, I've been so fortunate to have so many people care about my career and could guide me, and I trusted them deeply. And for me, it was, they were, you know, advocates for me, but then I was able to have a conversation with them that was really honest on, were options the right options? And if they weren't, that's okay, because there might be a new opportunity that's better that'll come along. And so I think, you know, my career has a lot of great lessons learned so far, and a handful of them certainly are, be open-minded, take risks. Man, I did 3 jobs in a row I didn't want to do, and they were all 3 amazing.
But you did not want to do them.
No, I reluctantly did them because of the managers. You know, managers are important, right? And I knew if the job ultimately wasn't going to be enjoyable for me, because having fun's really important to me, they would help me find something else. The job turned out to be, all 3 of them turned out to be great learnings, great contributions to our company. And in each case, my manager did support me and helped me be successful. And so I took a lot of risks. And like I said, they weren't the sexy job at the company, right? It was kind of the job that was a little bit harder and maybe had a little bit more challenges, and you had to work uphill a little bit more.
You had to work a lot harder to accomplish the job.
You know, but absolutely mm-hmm. worth it. I've been lucky.
Great lessons there though, Shannon. You know, if you've been reluctant to take those jobs, then you would not have had that experience. And I always liken it to kind of like a snowball. You know, and a snowball, as you go along, you just get more and more, you know, it gets bigger and bigger. And that is what happens, I believe, in your career, as you take on those things that maybe aren't that sexy or that comfortable. You're going to learn some things if you have a high, what I call a high growth quotient. You'd mentioned like being in R&D. So I know that the stats and the research is showing us that by 2050, our population growth is just going to explode. We're going to be at 10 billion people. And so the demand for both fiber, for clothing, and for food is continuing to grow up. But then you and I have talked about this, our land is actually shrinking. And so innovation is paramount to ag, because you've got to be more efficient. You've got to increase your yield on a smaller plot of land. I mean, all of those things, you know, and so tell us a little bit about that. And I don't know if you want to get into genetic editing or that sort of thing.
No, I think, you know, a lot of times when I have the opportunity to get interviews, I think that there's this assumption that a large company like Bayer and formerly Monsanto was single-mindedly focused on one way of growing a crop, right? Which was biotech. And also you think about modern agriculture in North America or South America. And the reality is, I can tell you, every single scientist that comes into work every single day is driven by the mission. And the mission's to put food on people's plates everywhere around the world. And it's not biotech, it's not organic, it's all of them. You know, I think people say, that's okay. Yes, it's okay. All of them are okay. And it's going to take all types of food, regardless of where you're at. And in some instances, maybe biotech isn't the solution. We've come to understand here in the Americas and in other parts of the world the great benefits of it, but we're open-minded to a lot of ways to advance yields, to advance quality, and really to put, you know, like I say, a better product of food on people's plates. And that's really the focus. Obviously, we have lots of new technologies. We have gene editing, excitingly. 2 of those innovators, both women, were just recognized with a Nobel Prize for chemistry. Super exciting if you think about women in science and the advances that women are making just in contributing to really great technologies. But certainly we're looking at in Bayer and actively involved in those new innovations. We obviously are continuing with real conventional breeding methods, which have brought a lot of benefits. And we're continuing to be focused in biotech. It's not one or the other, it's all of them. And each region's going to have, and each crop specifically will have a really unique fit of how we're going to integrate some of those technologies in the marketplace. But importantly, I mean, I've had the opportunity to travel to farms that are, you know, 1 or 2 acres, right? So think about it, you know, my patch of grass out here is 6 times the size of that, their farm, right? And their family lives off of this. And the impact of technology, I mean, it's not anything you can forget. They can send their children to school. They can put a roof on a house. I mean, it changes their lives. And those are things you don't forget. I think about how technology changed our family's life too, right? The simplicity, like I said, my parents are farming today in ways.
And there's two of them.
There's right? two of them.
Shannon,
and they need.
There were tons.
Yeah. The yields we're getting, unbelievable, right? So it's changed the lives of people everywhere. Mm-hmm. But go to a family farm in a third world country, you will not forget the impacts that it had on that family, right? I mean, our houses have roofs, right? That impact is just something I won't. And that's, you know, when I think about we work for the mission, that's what we wake up and we work for. It's how do we not just make it better for the farmer here in Defiance? How do we make it better for the farmer everywhere around the world?
Well, I love that. I'm going to dig more into this. There's a lot more topics I want to talk about, but we need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Shannon Howe.
Are you an IT executive with years of experience? Are you energized when you empower others? If I've piqued your interest thus far, you may be a great mentor for the TechLX program in St. Louis. TechLX prepares rising IT leaders to tackle today's challenges and prepare for tomorrow's demanding roles by pairing them with senior IT executives like yourself. Mentors receive coaching from technology partners and will be invited to all TechLX networking events featuring outstanding speakers of the IT industry. To apply, visit tpi.co/TLX.
So Shannon, I know that getting an ag product to market takes so long comparatively. I think you said like an Xbox was in 2.6 years and the Boeing Dreamliner was in 8 years, but it takes 13 years to get an ag product to market and $136 million.
Yep. It's a terribly long time. It's getting longer too, right? So when we started down this path, it was probably closer to the 8-9 years. And now it's 12, 13 and creeping even longer. It's not the inventing and it's not the developing. It's satisfying regulatory agencies around the world in an environment that's highly political. And that's become the single greatest expense of time as well as we bring new technologies to the marketplace. And frankly, it is only the large companies, when you think about that expense and time, that can participate because it is so expensive. And I'll tell you, the $136 million is creeping up really, really fast in some of these technologies. And like I've said, it's not the science, right? It's the political challenges or even the misunderstanding of the science around the world. And even in the US, we have challenges of getting products through and registered, right? While we have greater challenges in other parts of the world, it's not without saying that we don't have our own challenges here that we're really putting a lot of effort at to ensure that our technologies have the opportunity to get to farmers. Fortunately, our farmers are our greatest advocates for these technologies, and they show up and, you know, make sure that those regulators understand the importance of getting access to these technologies. It's not whether the technology comes from the company that I work for or another company. It's how do we get technologies to farmers? And frankly, that's good competition for all of us. We're all striving to have a better innovation so that farmers, you know, they write a check once a year. And we want them to write it to us.
Sure.
It's expensive and it takes a lot of time. And, you know, we're committed to it. but we know that there's a lot of opportunity to improve the process as well.
Well, I know you guys aren't stopping
No. Because
you spend a whole lot on R&D and innovation. So I know you're not going to stop.
Absolutely. No.
So I appreciate what you said before. That's what really gets you up in the morning. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a greater mission, truly, than to put food on the table. Everybody needs that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Shannon, I know that you speak a lot in women in science conferences and things, and diversity and inclusion is really important. And you've actually seen this play out on some of the teams and how diverse teams just do better. So talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, so both diversity and inclusion is, you know, important to me personally, and also, you know, as a leader in our company, you know, in advocating and advancing initiatives around diversity and inclusion. You know, I think about our R&D organization. We know diverse teams have better innovation, right? So for us, diversity is a lot of things. The one I'm focused on, obviously, is gender diversity. And I think about some of the great innovations that have come out of our company, and there are women behind those innovations, and there are diverse teams. So it's a great example of how we can put diverse teams together. We just don't want teams that are diverse to be diverse. They have to also be included. So if you have a seat, it's not just having a seat, but it's asking the person in that seat, you know, to make sure that they're contributing and adding value to that team. I wouldn't say we're at where we want to be. We struggle like every other large company. As leadership levels increase, fewer women are a part of those leadership teams. But what we are committed to do is to change the outcomes. How can we change as we move forward and we select individuals that we're developing and advancing women? We know the benefits. We know both the business outcome benefits, and we know the benefits to creating a great work environment as well. So we have a number of initiatives across the organization that are really focused on both the metrics, but then the quality of the programming that we have. You know, like I say, that women in science, we're not a coffee club. You know, we don't get together and drink coffee. We're solving problems, people. And we're coming to your leadership table.
Yes.
And we want to be a part of it. And it's about how do we develop and advance those leaders. And absolutely, we've made progress. When we started this initiative about 5 years, we've made both progress in the metrics, which is always important, but we've made progress in how people talk about it and the quality of our leaders as we move forward. And it's not without a lot of time and commitment, but every single minute and hour spent on this is well worth it.
Well, as you were talking, I was just thinking, you know, you just can't leave it to chance. I mean, you guys have been very intentional.
When I think about from 5 years ago, right, it was, we knew diversity and inclusion was important. We knew having women in leadership was important. But how much effort were we going to spend on changing the outcome? That was where we had to be incredibly intentional as we thought about women leadership, as we thought about their development, and as we think about slates of candidates. You know, and I brought two more women into my leadership team, and I actively and aggressively recruited them. They are exceptional talent. And that's the difference. It's like, they might not proactively apply for your job, but if you reach out to them and tell them more about it, I bet they're going to be willing to sign up for it.
Right. At least to listen.
Absolutely.
And that's just great advice for companies out there that say, oh yeah, we want a diverse culture, but you just can't hope that it happens. Hope is not a strategy.
Nope.
So you and I met through the most influential businesswomen.
Yep.
We were both very honored and humbled to be a part of that group this year. But I want to ask you, when you think about being most influential, when you think about influential, what does that mean to Shannon Health?
Yeah, for me, it's about getting people to, you know, move and be a part of an outcome because they want to be. They want to be included and they want to help you and the team be successful. That's the biggest part of having the ability to influence, is getting people who want to be part of it.
Mm-hmm. Not just have to, because what their boss has told them. So do you have for yourself any specific tactics that you've used? I mean, is it more about how you show up as a leader? I mean, tell me that a little bit. I mean, how do you get people to want to be part of the mission?
You know, for me, the biggest thing is including others. You know, people want to be valued and included. everybody wants to be all around the world. They want to be valued and included. And so how do you include people? How do you paint the picture for them and help them see the benefits of being part of the team? And I would say lastly, it's caring. As we think about today's work environment, I tell my team, I said, just when you think you've cared enough for your people, care a little bit more, because there's so much that we need to be doing.
Yes. And especially during this time.
Absolutely.
Shannon, this is something extra. So I'm sure that you have thought, what is a something extra that you believe every leader needs?
You know, I would tell you right now, and my answer today is probably a little bit different than my answer 8 or 10 months ago. And I've said that for me, the biggest thing that has changed my leadership style is empathy or compassion. It's everybody has a situation, regardless if they have children or parents or they're single, that we don't understand. There'll be some silver linings, certainly, I think, that emerge from the challenges we're currently faced with. And I hope one of them is leaders who are a bit more empathetic and compassionate for every single person's situation.
Yeah. I mean, what is the old adage? You don't really know until you've walked a mile in that person's moccasins. Yep. You know, we really don't understand unless we've been there, right? And even at that, there's just so many differences. So I love empathy.
Yep.
And we do need more empathic people in the world, that's for sure. So I know we've talked a lot about women. We've talked a lot about how important diversity is and you being so intentional with growing women leaders. What are you doing? I want to give you the opportunity, Shannon, to talk about some of the things that you're passionate about where you're trying to grow younger leaders. And, you know, if our listeners say, hey, that resonates with me, I want to get involved in that. And, you know, how could they get involved?
Yeah. So I think, you know, certainly two initiatives that are important to me. First is I'm a leader in 4-H, which is an organization of youth. So the largest youth organization focused in agriculture, STEM, and leadership. And certainly it was historically, I think, thought of as for rural communities, but 4-H today is actually very much urban. And it also just teaches life skills, right? So where can we just get life skills? And then thinking about leadership. And then the second is I'll have the opportunity to join the board at Marion Middle School, which for me is, you know, how do we tackle the issues of racial injustice, social injustice, and then also creating a generation that has interest and excitement for pursuing careers in STEM. Both initiatives that are really important to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think about Marion and I think about equal access.
Yep.
I too, as you know, love the Marion model. And I think one of the big differentiators for them is the graduate support program. So when you're, you know, they say one of their taglines is once a Marion girl, always a Marion girl, and walking along beside that girl, even through graduate studies. And so I love that you're part of that. And so thank you for everything that you're doing to grow this next generation of leaders.
I see it as a responsibility.
Well, and we've been given so much, have we not, Shannon?
Absolutely.
So many opportunities that we need. It's time. It's our turn.
Yep.
It's our turn to give back. So thank you so much for making the time today. This has been so much fun. And yeah, we're just a country block away from each other. So
for sure.
We need to go grab a bite to eat when COVID is no longer a threat. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Shannon. I've really enjoyed our time.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.